great to be here. Famous, in Galway, it's Cork event. I'll just start with a poem called No Name. And I suppose I really gave up on poetry after school, and then I carried around. But then I discovered some poems by Roger McGough and Stevie Smith. And I carried a Stevie Smith poem around in a writing case I've been given as a present for most of my adult life. So she comes in for a mention here. And there's also the line, the last two lines of this poem are stolen from T.S. Eliot, East Coker. I'm a little bit from that too, so. Well, I did write some of it. No Name. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name, Lao Tzu. Let us then name nothing, even that is falsifying eternity. An endless nothing must be something, I feel sure Stevie Smith would say. But no, nothing is nothing at all. Not a moment in time, an eternity of timelessness. Though there are many, and I would have it so. Turn then to darkness, for, as Eliot said, the darkness shall be light, and the stillness the dancing. I had the great good fortune to go and visit Florence a couple of years ago. I hadn't been there. And had a wonderful time, and was really blown away by the sculpture in particular, and Michelangelo's David comes into this poem. When I came home, I was all inspired to get on and do things that I'd left undone for ages, so that inspired some of this. And it's called Fred Lee, who is a neighbour of mine. Fred Lee. Michelangelo has had an effect. I'm clearing out the gutters on the top of a ladder. His David inspiring steps after years. Hewn muscular form, I longed to run a palm along, soaked in, absorbed, like a rescued woman retrieves air and pure water to slake thirst drop by drop, gulps, glass falls. Sean's health and safety warning almost knocked me off my perch, out of the blue calling from the road. His offer of help and your recommendations, that such Michelangelo promptings are messages best ignored. Laughter, the best of neighbours. I had a kind of psychotherapy career for quite a long time before I got to writing. And I went to some workshops, as some of you may have heard, it's a guy called Stan Grof, the psychiatrist studying LSD in Czechoslovakia before he came to the States, and he ran things and breathing. But one of the things that he came up with, this idea that maybe if there are past lives, it's more like an open book that folds open the page. So that comes into the end of this book. This poem is called My Love. We must have passed each other by, for I have caught sight of you in commonplace romance, the small moments of every day, in the arms of one I felt sure was mine, but who was not, and in delicious expectation of hands held after a brush of lips. In another climate, the sun on rocks, arid sand and dry grass might have shown us a dark-skinned chameleon in the shadows before disappearing down a crevice. We must take trains across Europe, boat journeys down the Nile, and into the depths of the Amazon, for I have been beside you there, fire crackling in the black, black night, a chanting dancer. We may have been star children, may have been made of clay, some thongs chipped and eroded by polishing, painted on the walls of caves, seen the sun rise on the cusp of a wave from the pebbled lakeside shore. We must have passed each other by this time around, but I don't give up hope. I cling to all we have known and to what is to come. Maybe if I close the book we will find each other between the leaves of fresh covers another day, another time, possibly even over leaf. Life has a way. Each tendril has to have its clasp loosened, plucked from the latticed trellis. Predictable diagonals no longer relied upon, the old growth pulled out from between yellow grass, stragglers cut back. Bright green sprouts beneath the buds. So, I suppose that's a suggestion of something that did that. So I had some medical challenges in the period I was writing this book. And I had, because of the imagery work I had done, I had found I was had this image for resilience, which was a walrus. So that's relevant to this poem. Laughter therapy. Laugh. There is nothing else to do at times like this. Watch the walrus with long tusks somersault, flap flippers roll over. The walrus survives Arctic spaces. Tusks lengthen with age, dig deep into ice in a hole, give grip. It's hilarious. Try not to laugh, adjured as you are, to stay still on a scanner. So the root poem for this book was written quite a few years ago. I wanted to begin to write a book. There was a book of poems written about different emotions, so I thought I'd take one emotion, fear. And partly too, I wanted to explore kind of paralysed place. I felt I get into that kind of rabbit in the headlight place that can happen, or that can lead you to procrastinate. So it brought me into undertow. I'm going to read it. It's now a poem in four sections. I'm going to read the first and the third. Undertow one. Corporeal fear. A corpse weighted in ropes. Below water. Heel dog undertow. Against current. Faceless. Can only breathe deep. Watch seals on rocks offshore. Swim to land. Sliver up beach. Determined to leave fins behind. By tide's turn surrender. Can't undo. Not. Untangle. Umbilical cords anchored to sea. Bed. Three. Scuffed call shroud ensures she won't drown. Shedded fish tail lands her. Salted nostrils shell sound ear full. Tides turning her womb. The moon dances, veins plays shadows, while earth plays bones. was not only personal fear of the last few years, the recession and all that's been happening has led to many collective situations. And my daughter was doing some research for a master's degree on unfinished housing estates, and I was visiting a few places with her, and it suddenly struck me that I'd been looking at rubble of houses all of my lifetime, actually, that there had been other estates and houses left behind by emigrants and other tight times. So that led to this poem called The Glory of Rubble. The possibility of unfinished houses, concrete block. No prim finish cover for the hazards of fire, cracks and shaky foundations, monuments. These estates replace dwellings left behind, former generation, degenerate weeds in the roof, daffodils in tumbled gardens, stone piles beside broken shed walls. Orange corrugated iron, patchy, twisted, a dangling drain pipe, water butt drips. Clustered stone crumbles of lost villages. Leave them alone. Nettles, the twisted iron bedsteads. Mildewed mattresses, wisps of horsehair, grey cotton flowers. The rusty range and chair with a broken leg. Residue, its own pleasure. Hummocks of grass strewn with broken brown glass and the remains of a blue bottle. There are no happy endings, but buttercups flourish here and dandelions. There's a robin on a stone, a blackbird's song. Spiders weave their webs in peace, walls with holes in the windows and the hanging door with rusted clasp still provide shelter of a dry space for a tramp who will never visit. Cows and pigs better off where they are, despair scrubbed surfaces in tidy kitchens elsewhere. You may remember, I think when you're going through a whole period of change and transition, which did happen through this poem, I decided if I was going to choose emotion next time, I'd choose joy and not fear, that the universe has a way perhaps of providing with opportunity for creativity that I sometimes could have done without. But there is something about when you change from one situation in life and you're going through a period to next, as you know, that you can feel very uncertain of your standing in the world and what you're about, and a bit crazy at times. Alongside of which, you may remember Christmas a few years ago, the staff in Grange Gorman Hospital in Dublin, which is just about closed down now, weren't able to be provided for patients, and there was quite a bit of public debate about the fact they were going to be in a locked, those who were not usually in a locked ward were going to be in a locked ward over Christmas, of staffing shortages. So all of that kind of went into this poem, plus the fact I found myself working with papier-mâché, and I seem to have ended up with three poems with papier-mâché in this book, and this is one of them, and it's called In the Darkness. In the darkness of the asylum, she made papier-mâché beads from crushed paper. The stickiness satisfying, her fingers immersed in glue, smoothing torn squares in layers on the surface. When the occupational therapist spent the last of her budget on metallic paint and a volunteer donated gold, she found light could create something beautiful. mentioned resilience before, and I think that's a kind of a bit of a buzzword, discovering resilience for times of things falling apart. So this was another poem that came out of that kind of image, and it's called Austerity. Red shawls on the Maasai hunter, his apprentice. Staffs and loincloths, bare feet shod in open leather soles. They walk for weeks, search for the antelope, prey to lions, whose first bites leave blood tracks. These last grassland masters seek out and follow for days of remaining in sight. They think we know nothing. Men whisper, laugh at their own trackers. A BBC film crew, health and safety fears. Faced down by Maasai intent, 15 lions mauling an antelope carcass, slink back, triggered to spring. A circle of eyes watch as the hunters carve off a leg, sling it over shoulders, walk on. So I've just two more poems, and then I'm looking forward to hearing yours. And thank you very much for having me along. This second last poem is called Dry Feathers on Bone. I've been working as a facilitator for a lot of years related to training and therapy and all of that kind of thing, gave that up. And I suddenly found myself wondering what it would be like to work with that in poetry. And I'd had this idea for a couple of years about having a conversation about faith for people of no religion and any religion, or for people with an interest in poetry or no knowledge of it. And I didn't give myself enough preparation, but I put it out and there weren't enough people, or it would have been too intense with the number who were there, I thought. Then some neighbours asked me if I'd run the course anyway, and it grew, and we've run it for a few times, all over different topics, but it began there. So the first night I thought we'd get into metaphor and, you know, to thinking more that way, and put some objects out on a table. So this poem really comes from the images that were selected in the discussion, I think, and it's called Dry Feathers on Bone. Gather on a wing and a prayer, meaningless corn, a silent rattle. A closed book is not the word. In dialogue, light. Reluctant listeners imbibe, engage, reach out in supplication to break earth open. As St. Bridget's cross weave of faithful action, roots seed to find voice in the dark, sing to green absorbing light. These yoga postures, the irregular pattern of branches paired back, propagate sap, spiraling flight. So this was one weekend in Westport, and the poem is called One White House or Another. One White House or Another. And it was when I was visiting a friend who keeps goats. One kid under each arm, she brings them in. The nanny follows in pelting rain. That morning we had dug, our spades hacking to cut roots and shoveling earth to bury the kid. Taken by cesarean in open yard surgery, from a nanny not known to be pregnant. She wasn't out of danger, but the bran mash and homeopathic remedy Irma van Balen gave her. The goat book suggestion that poison might be mitigated that way gave hope. She milked her. Three women kept watch in the tiny shed, drinking brandy by candlelight long after the vet left. Two of them had begun Kerholly Cheese, first in Wexford, then Westport. Irma told Barbara she'd heard the current proprietors provided a recent round for the Taoiseach to bring to the White House. Thank you.